Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. And this episode, we'll pick up a little bit where last week's episode, talking about the most important players, ended. We started to talk about players who could surprise and make the list. This episode kind of looks at those players. We're looking at breakout players and underrated players. So we're not talking about the stars that everyone knows, the household names, the guys making the All-American preseason lists or preseason first team All-Big Ten. This episode's kind of looking at a little bit of who's next, who's maybe being slept on, and who could be X factor or play unheralded roles for the Wolverines this fall. Because I got to say, every good Michigan team that there's been has had players who surprised or stepped up more than they were supposed to. That's not just true for football, but I think, especially the last couple of years, think about the players who didn't make, the most important player list or weren't preseason all Big Ten, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, here they come. And, you catch glimpses here and there, like David Ajabo. Everyone knew that at some point, he was going to be a factor. And he went from 28 snaps to first team All Big Ten defensive end in one season. So he's probably always the extreme example I go to. But think about last year, Michael Barrett was not a player who was making the top 25 most important players list. Makari Page, you could probably talk about Carson Barnhart or Colston Loveland was someone who did not start the season in the role that he ended the season in. And so some players are underclassmen, some players are veterans who finally figure it out. But Steve, let's start by looking at the offense, because I do think it is interesting. I talk about how every good Michigan team needs players to step up. This offense returns so many prominent players and adds so many veteran offensive linemen in the transfer portal that there isn't a ton of room for, breakout player, or I should say a surprise player. Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards, they won't be surprise players. JJ McCarthy, Cornelius Johnson, Roman Wilson, they won't be surprises. On the offensive line, you return Zach Zinter, Trevor Keegan, Carson Barnhart, Trente Jones, and then they add, pretty well-known veterans, Ladarius Henderson, Drake Nugent, Miles Hinton. So there isn't a ton of room, but I do think that there is room for a breakout player in the receiving game, whether it's at wide receiver or at tight end. I'm going to let you go first, but I think you and I have some similar names in mind. Who kind of jumps out as a legitimate breakout candidate, either at wide receiver or at tight end right now?
Yeah, those are the two spots, right, where we're looking for somebody to kind of step up, both almost more at tight end, just because Michigan likes to play four or five guys a game. I'm really intrigued with what Matthew Hibner could add to Michigan's passing game from the tight end position. I think we've said it probably coming out of the spring game. To me, it can sometimes only take one or two plays to see what a guy's capable of. And I know he tripped over the 15-yard line or whatever, but that's some speed at a position where, there are guys who can run, but he looked like he was running at a totally different pace than guys. I know he's somebody Michigan has brought along slowly, you look at even a guy like Marlon Klein, Michigan has been able to bring guys along slowly at tight end. Guys have not necessarily had to be rushed into a position. Now, Colston Loveland emerged last year just because he's just that talented. I mean, we knew Michigan thought that Loveland had a chance to make it right away, and he did. But I think, like, I'm fascinated with what Michigan could do with Hibner as, in sort of an H-back type deal in the passing game. I mean, you think about like a Hibner, Donovan Edwards situation, you know, where there's just a multitude of ways Michigan would be able to attack in the passing game. I know, I'd say, call it an informed opinion. I do think Michigan thinks that Matthew Hibner can become a factor this year. So, and we know that Michigan will use tight ends and has used tight ends consistently under Jim Harbaugh. So he's kind of the first name that comes to mind. I assume that a guy like Darius Clemens might be who you're thinking. I mean, he'd be the second name for me just because of the physical tools that he possesses at wide receiver. And yeah, I agree with you totally. Like, receiver's another spot where we might be talking about a guy. I'm not even, honestly, I'm not writing off freshman Frederick Moore as a potential guy who could make some plays this year in the passing game too. So, but yeah, biggest one for me, I think, just off, not off the top of my head, but even after thinking, is Matthew Hibner, because yeah, like you said, running back, you know, there'll be a third guy that might get the ball, but it's not going to be a major, major role in the offensive line. Yeah, I mean, good luck for some of the younger players to really crack that rotation with who Michigan has up top.
I think it's going to be hard for a freshman offensive line to lineman to crash the party, or even a redshirt freshman offensive line. I mean, they'll play, right? And we'll see. Amir Herring is probably like a perfect example. Like, we'll see him, I'm sure, at the tail end of some of these more lopsided games. But I'd be very surprised at this stage. I may ask me in a month, halfway through fall camp, maybe I'll have a different answer. But I would be surprised if it was there. I'm with you on Hibner, because after the spring game, Sharon Moore had that quote about how the light has really turned on for Hibner. And you know, this is really like this spring was a spring where he showed a lot of growth, a lot of progress. And I'll make the comparison. I mean, Luke Schoonmaker, his first three seasons on campus, you look at his stats, he had two catches. But then he kind of started to impress coaches in year four. And some of it's developing weight. Some of it's learning the ins and outs of the blocking at the tight end position. I mean, that has got to be the funkiest position to scout high school talent at. You know, because obviously there's some guys who play at the powerhouse programs and they shine at all the camps. So those guys, everyone knows what they can do. But you look at where Michigan has found its tight ends over the years, it is like small town, states that aren't heavily scouted, offenses that, I mean, Schoonmaker was playing quarterback, right? And, you know, it's, and I think some of the other tight ends they've had, like, were in offenses that just genuinely didn't throw the ball more than three or four times in a game. So it's very interesting, all the different types of tight ends that come into college camp, not just Michigan, but schools overall, and you know, the different things that they have to learn. But yeah, Hibner, 6'5", 245. He was, I know 24/7's evaluation team really liked him, you know, as a four-star recruit. I think you dubbed him Mr. 1000 because he climbed 1,000 spots in the recruiting rankings in his senior year.
Wasn't he like the only player we've interviewed on this podcast?
He might be. He might be.
Didn't we get him on here to interview him? And I think that's what we called him. But you're totally right about the scouting thing, though. I mean, just for an example, it's the scouting at tight end has evolved to a certain extent. I mean, I know Penn State has a tight end commitment right now who has barely played any tight end, and I think the composite and 24/7 both have him as a top 100 type prospect. So, and I mean, I want to say that I think the number two or three ranked tight end in the country is committed to Nebraska, and he plays in, I mean, you talk about a small town. I know when Michigan had to go visit him, and I'm sure this went the same for other schools, had to fly into like one of those like grassland like airports to see him, just because there wasn't a municipal airport or anywhere in the remote vicinity of where he was at. So it is by far the most unique position to evaluate and recruit, particularly at the second level, because, you know, there's always top guys that are going to stand out, right? But year in and year out, you see guys drafted or emerge in college football every year at the tight end spot who A, either weren't tight ends to start, or B, were not highly recruited or highly ranked coming out of high school. There's a handful of schools, you know, like I say, Michigan, Penn State, Notre Dame, Stanford, sort of under Harbaugh and a little bit under Shaw, who have always kind of recruited and developed the tight end position well, but year in and year out, you see guys, you know, kind of come out of nowhere. And yeah, when Michigan first found Matthew Hebner, that was, I think he had a couple regional offers. I think Virginia Tech had offered, or he may have even been committed there if I remember right. But either way, yeah, moved up once our guys got their hands on this film. Yeah, he moved up a ton. But yeah, that was an interesting little nugget thrown there, because it's true. I think it's actually one of the more fascinating positions to kind of cover from a recruiting standpoint, just because there are so many, you know, maybe an undersized offensive tackle or an oversized wide receiver. Like I think of Mark Andrews, you know, who's now an all pro for the Baltimore Ravens, committed and signed with Oklahoma because he wanted to play a receiver. Any school that was recruiting him at tight end was eliminated. He turns into a 2-time All-American tight end and a first round draft pick. Right. And is now like maybe one of the 3 or 4 best tight ends in the league. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, if you go through the tight ends Jim Harbaugh has recruited at Michigan, I mean, at this point you just kind of trust him, you know, whether it's a quarterback from New Mexico, Luke Schoonmaker. I remember coworkers at the time getting a call and being told like, hey, you guys should probably make a recruiting profile for this player because he's going to commit to Michigan tomorrow. And it's like, you know, but the recruiting sites didn't even have pages on Schoonmaker yet. And, you know, Sean McCune was from a lowly recruited area. Nick Eubanks was a wide receiver, right? And so, yeah, you run through the whole list. It's almost hilarious. And then of course, Colson Loveland is kind of the next guy. And he's from a town of 3,700 people in Idaho, in Gooding, Idaho. So it's definitely interesting. And so, yeah, I think Hebner was someone, he was kind of the Schoonmaker mold, where I think it was more of a year three, maybe even year four. I mean, Schoonmaker was a year four was when he really started to truly make a difference. And Marlon Klein, you mentioned him. I will throw him in that conversation of breakout potential. I am kind of the belief that he might still be a year away, but I think he's got a very high ceiling, 6'6". I want to say he ran a 11-second 100-meter dash. I think track wasn't even something that he like did a ton of growing up, but he just has like that natural speed. So
there, and a German native who played for a tiny school, I believe on like the North Carolina, Georgia border or something in the middle of nowhere. I remember when Josh Newkirk went out there to scout him. If I remember right, he either got lost or something like trying to find the school that he was playing at. So again, another great example of a guy who, so they all have very interesting backstories, it seems like.
At this point, you almost want them to be
random town. You don't want 5-star from modern day or anything like that. Yeah. No, you want German transplant in rural northeast Georgia, you know. So yeah, that's kind of funny.
So personally, I'm with you. I'm with Hebner being a little bit more this year. But Klein, you know, Sharon Moore kind of said he might have the highest athletic ceiling of anyone in the tight end room, and that's including Colson Loveland. So, you know, those are two players I think with breakout potential. But Steve, I before we move on from tight end, which I admittedly this is a long time to spend on tight end, but I do want to talk a little bit about AJ Barner, because I think he, of all the transfers, is probably the one being the most underrated. I was very surprised he did not do super well in the fan ballot for the most important players. And, you know, obviously some of that's the excitement for Colson Loveland. I think he finished top 10 in the fan ballot, but AJ Barner transferred from Indiana, 200 yards, was a captain last year, 200 yards receiving for an offense that wasn't very good. I'm just curious your thoughts. I mean, we saw him make a couple big plays in that spring game. But the chatter you've gathered, I mean, this is a guy who probably will play starter level snaps. And then one thing I will note is he has a little bit more blocking experience than Colson Loveland has. And I think that might allow him to carve out, I think, a bigger role than he's getting credit for right now. I mean, I don't think he technically made my top 25 most important players list, but I think he was in my next five. And he was someone that I think might be, I mean, maybe even I'm even sleeping on him a little bit. I mean, I feel like he checks a lot of the boxes at tight end for Michigan.
Well, I think we talked about him a little bit last episode. I mean, yeah, he was a team captain for another Big Ten program. And I know Indiana, whatever, but either way, I mean, a guy that played extensively there. And if there's one thing, now we talk about Michigan brings back a lot of guys offensively, but let's be honest, I mean, they lost a lot at tight end though, particularly in the experience department.
Well, if we're counting Carter Selzer as scholarship, I'm counting five tight ends on scholarship that are gone from last season's roster.
Yeah. So there's talent. And honestly, just from a sheer talent standpoint, they might have a little bit more, but from an experience standpoint, which I think tight end is one of those spots where experience at the highest levels can be as valuable as the talent can be. You know, I mean, I think we talk about developing the tight end position. I mean, I think a lot of guys, and I actually think Luke Schoonmaker may end up falling into this category. His best days of football still may be ahead of him in the pros. You know, I think for Barner, yeah, absolutely, because he's a much, if we're being honest, I mean, he's a more well-rounded player at the position than Loveland is. Loveland is an elite, I think he has the overwhelmingly likely potential to be elite in the passing game. And he's obviously he's getting there too as an all-around guy. But yeah, Barner's been doing this for 3+ years in the big, he's already played in this conference and he's succeeded. So yeah, I think looking at him offensively as the most underrated player, it might actually be kind of an easy pick, really, when you actually think about it. Because as you said, he's got to be the clear number two at the position, and really when running the football, you know, it might be 1A and 1B, you know, and so he's a guy that could really find some success. He'll be on the field to block, but could really be the tight end to find the most success in the play action game as well, you know? So I think it's a great pick for the guy who's really probably being the most slept on. And yeah, Michigan did had a lot of, let's say not flashier, but you know, the offensive line additions got a lot of pub because Michigan has won two more Joe Moore awards. Now people think they could win a third one in a row. They needed a linebacker. They got one of the two or three best in the portal in Ernest Hausman. And then even the Josh Wallace addition here, because of the question marks at second corner, you know, got a little bit more. And yeah, the A.J. Barner commitment kind of snuck in there a little bit, a little under the radar. And I want to say he might have committed like the same day or right around the time that one of the other guys had committed as well, which also can kind of sometimes play a role in just perception and just reaction to something. But yeah, I mean, He'll probably play more snaps than at least one of the transfer offensive linemen that they picked up, right? I mean,
yeah, he'll probably be top 11, top 12 in snaps played.
Yes.
Just based on how Michigan uses its tight ends. I mean, they do a lot of two tight end sets. And then the factor of his blocking ability. I mean, I can't say I've watched every Indiana game or every in and out of his blocking ability, but he's got a filled out frame. He's played 3 years in the Big Ten. Yeah, I would anticipate that he would. Yeah, I think he'll. It's kind of like Makari Page. Like, okay, if you don't want to include him in your top 10 most important defensive players, that's fine. But he's gonna play enough that he is that important. I mean, it's Barner's gonna be a factor in their tight end play this year.
And you don't. I'm guessing here, but you don't get voted captain if you're not doing the little things too.
As a junior too.
Yes. So a guy who you have to assume is willing to, you know, be an asset both running the football and in the receiving game.
Yeah, I agree. All right, real quick on receivers before we flip over to defense. I mean, we mentioned tight end. There's definitely room for a third, fourth, maybe even fifth receiver to step up, because not only did they lose Ronnie Bell, who had the most targets, receptions, receiving yards, really was the primary consistent game-to-game number one receiver for Michigan. But they also lose Andrell Anthony and A.J. Henning, and those aren't necessarily departures that change maybe the bottom line or the Vegas win total for Michigan, but they do impact the depth and the target distribution among in Michigan's passing game. And so I do think there's a lot of targets, and Cornelius Johnson, I anticipate, will get more targets. I assume Roman Wilson will get more than he got a season ago. But I think there's absolutely room for anyone who can or will step up. You know, I think the first guy that, based on the chatter I was hearing about him before the bowl game, so during the bowl practices, because that's always a chance for coaches to kind of hit the reset button a little bit. You know, they're not thinking about the next week's game plan. They're just kind of like, okay, who's been getting better throughout the fall? And I know Tyler Morris was a guy whose name came up a lot in that situation. And we actually got to see at least snippets of practice. And I really liked the way he looked in those bowl practices. And also, I guess, in the bowl game too, he actually played a decent amount of snaps, very Ronnie Bell-like in terms of his skill set. Good leaping ability, you know, good ability to just has that instinct, I guess, to make the play that needs to be made, not necessarily run the exact route that was in the playbook. And, you know, if the ball isn't there, oh, try again next time. Like, he's got that gamer instinct that I feel like Ronnie Bell had. I mean, he was an elite high jumper. I actually, one time, Steve, I took his high jump mark from his sophomore year, and he would have been top 12 at the Big Ten championships in the high jump if you translated it. So, I mean, he's got really exceptional athleticism. I know he had an injury his senior year, so that kind of slow rolled his freshman year a little bit. But, you know, he's someone that really jumps out to me as someone, literally, I guess, to an extent. But, you know, he jumps out to me as someone who can be slot. He can play a little bit outside. You know, he's not going to be specialized necessarily, and he's just gonna, he seems, at least from what I've been able to tell, he seems to have that knack for finding where the quarterback needs to throw the ball, not necessarily just following your route. To me that's Ronnie Bell to a T, right? No matter who the quarterback was, no matter who the offensive coordinator was, he always led the team in receiving yards because he found ways to get open, to break his route if he needed to improvise if the play was breaking down. You know, just that instinctive ability. And if Tyler Morris has that, Michigan could have its next Ronnie Bell, right? And so I think he's someone, I don't know if he's being underrated or slept on, but he does have that potential to be next. Darius Clemens, boy, he checks every NFL combine skill set, athleticism box you could ask for. Right. And so he almost reminds me of like a Nico Collins, where, boy, he can just, you know, once it all comes into play, once he gets all the nuances of being a college receiver, in addition to his size, speed, athleticism combination, he can be really dynamic and really effective. There's some other guys, right? You mentioned Frederick Moore. Peyton O'Leary had a really nice spring game. Someone's going to be the number three and number four receiver. Steve, any thoughts on who it could be or what it's going to take or what that might look like for Michigan this fall?
I forgot about O'Leary. That's definitely a name to probably at least put in the back pocket.
The irony, sure, of being slept on in a podcast about the players being slept on.
literally slept on within a slept on episode. Yeah, he's a name definitely to at least, like I said, put in the back pocket. Wilson's a guy that can stretch the defense. Cornelius Johnson's a guy, I think, is Michigan, unless Clemens can step up. And then we know Loveland, you know, guys that can make plays near the end zone. So I think the possibility is there for, like, yeah, like, again, and Ronnie Bell's a guy that made some huge plays for Michigan, but a lot of his value was also, I hate the term possession receiver because it sounds very mundane, like there's not a lot of value there. But I do think a guy that can get open underneath with reliable hands and A-plus route running is a guy that could really make some plays for Michigan this year, right? So that's why I do like the Tyler Morris thing. And you're right. He quietly played quite a bit for Michigan once he was fully healthy and ready, I guess. You know, he didn't – I don't think he took as long to become game ready as maybe even Michigan thought. And that's not just from a physical standpoint. That's like the whole package. So and the other small – maybe it's not small. Definitely – obviously the guy on the team who probably has the best rapport with J.J. McCarthy – right? So there's a lot of familiarity there,
that
too.
That played in high school for those.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yep. Yeah. Yep. I just assume everybody knows everything. But yeah, I mean, so there's some real familiarity with each other's games as well. So, you know, you can never, I don't think that you can, you know, overlook that necessarily. Is it a difference maker or the reason? Not necessarily, but it's definitely a can't hurt, can only help type deal as far as the type of impact he might be able to make. So, yeah, I know that we've weirdly, and I don't know if we're the only, I don't know if we're the only ones, but the third running back has gotten more conversation than like the third and fourth wide receiver, when really it should definitely, the third and fourth wide receiver are a lot more important for Michigan this season than I think the third running back would be when you know who Michigan has at one and two at running back. So, you know, yeah, there are a lot of different guys who it appears that they appear to have some different skill sets too. But you know, yeah, that, I think that'll quietly be one of the more important and more watched, I don't know, when you do some position battle stuff next month or whenever you're going to do those, you know, I think that will be one that will maybe need a little bit more attention than it's gotten so far.
Yeah, and I think part of it was Morris missed spring game, right? And so that kind of, and I believe Mike Hart was the only coach who actually met with reporters after the spring game. So it's kind of like, oh, Benjamin Hall made this great play, and Mike Hart had this, you know, great quote about how he reminds him of Hassan Haskins. So obviously everyone's going to write that story. Whereas receiver, I don't know if the takeaway from the spring game was, oh, look at this embarrassment of riches at wide receiver. I still think that's a position where Michigan is I don't think they're concerned, but they do need people to step up in fall camp, as expected every year. But you know, they would love to have some guys who really impress or really raise some eyebrows in fall camp, because that's a sign that the passing game can be as effective as they feel like it can be. All right, we're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about defense, and then we'll also talk about players. You know, if we're talking about breakout candidates, who can get themselves in position with a really strong summer workout cycle, and then ultimately we both will make our picks for the most underrated player on Michigan's team right now. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast. Selling a little or a lot?
Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, and we're back. Thanks for waiting. So, Steve, on defense, obviously there's a lot of returning talent. I have them down for 8 returning starters and 16 returning 2-deep players. So there's lots of familiar names, but because there's more rotation on defense, thinking about how the defensive line likes to rotate, the edge players like to rotate, you know, cornerbacks and safeties and linebackers, some of that's, you know, different players are going to play because of different matchups. So I do think that there's a little bit more room for breakout players. And the easy one is obviously Mason Graham. But I don't even know if he can count as a breakout player because he was a starter last season and he came in 8th in our countdown of Michigan's most important players. And we talked a lot about Kenneth Grant, too. I think, you know, from Harbaugh's Big Ten Media Day quote last year to, you know, all the different measurables that he has, he's someone that's been talked about a ton. You know, Derek Moore, I think he's probably played too much to be considered a breakout player, too. So who beyond maybe those three rising sophomores really jumps out to you as, let's call it surprise breakout potential, just to make sure, you know, because like I remember last year, a lot of people called Junior Colson a breakout player. That didn't count. He had 60 tackles as a true freshman. Let's go with a player who might surprise, who maybe isn't being counted on to contribute as a true, you know, starter right now, but definitely has the ability and might already be trending in the direction of being a true impact player this fall.
Tough one. I know this. I'd say this. I always write down like a list of like 5 or 6 guys that I'm most looking to get info on when fall camp hits. And the two names at the top of the list for me were Keyshawn Bennett and Micah Pollard. Pollard is somebody I have never been told otherwise, except that Michigan loves Micah Pollard's potential. How much does he weigh right now? I mean, there's a lot of interesting.
Yeah, he's listed. He's a linebacker, for those who don't know. He's listed at 208, I think.
Yeah, yep. I gotta think that there's been a mission to put some weight on his frame this offseason. But a guy that, like I said, I mean, I'll give you an example of how much I feel like Michigan still or really likes Pollard is when they picked up he's now a 4-star, but Jaden Smith, the linebacker commitment out of Charlotte. I know when Michigan first watched him, Micah Pollard is the guy that they thought of, that they kind of compared him to when evaluating him and then eventually pursuing him. So I can't imagine they would evaluate, pursue, and take a commitment from a kid that compared to a guy in their roster that they weren't very high on. Just kind of putting the pieces together here, but either way, so he's one, and then Keyshawn Bennett. Yep. At edge, the logic on that one is twofold. One, was continuously told last year that they thought he was a year away. It's next year. And B, I thought he actually had a pretty good showing for whatever it's worth in the spring game. Like, he looked like a guy who had some traits and had some flash in some certain spots. And they're relatively deep at edge, but I do think there is room for the right guy. And again, maybe I'd put Bennett in the same category as a guy like Amarion Walker, where, like, we reported on Walker that you know, he's going to get a lot of run probably later in games early in the season. You know, Michigan, an easy non-conference schedule. We anticipate they'll have some comfortable leads in the second half. But a guy that they're really going to count, that they think they might be able to count on in October and November. You know, I'm wondering if maybe I'd kind of put, at least maybe best case scenario, I'd put Bennett in that same category. But, you know, just trying to dig a little bit deeper there because, yeah, I mean, I think guys like I think a Rayshon Benny, a Zeke Berry, probably even a Jaden McBurrows. I mean, those are the types of guys I think we expected to see legit playing time early on. But yeah, I would say a guy, yeah, like a Micah Pollard, Keyshawn Bennett, guys that I think that maybe, you know, we'll be talking more about mid-season, maybe moving on after that.
Okay, yeah. And by the way, for those that are like, oh, we've heard that you're away. Steve did say David Ajabo was a year away, and that's what he had been hearing before the 2020 season. And sure enough, a year later, he had arrived. So definitely something to keep an eye on. So you kind of downplayed the whether Benny and Jaden McBurrows could count as surprises, but those are kind of the two guys who I don't think are expected starters, who I think could play a bigger role than they're getting credit for right now. And I will say the Jaden McBurrows, you know, I remember saying it in some of my depth chart position preview stuff in the winter and early spring, and people are like, whoa, okay, over Amarion Walker, sure, okay, interesting. But now it seems like more people are on board with that. But, you know, McBurrows, he was someone that we were hearing a lot about behind the scenes as a true freshman. And the comparison now, I'm not saying he runs a 4.28, but the comparison that was made to me was DJ Turner. And then similar to DJ Turner, who also had a very promising behind the scenes freshman year, you know, his sophomore year was kind of a redshirt freshman year, was kind of derailed by injuries. But DJ Turner was able to make an impact by year three. And I think Jaden McBurrows, you know, the Josh Wallace component of thing, you know, I don't know if that impacts his role. I don't know what that looks like. We probably won't know until they all practice at the same time against each other in front of the coaches in, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. But he's someone that I think, maybe we always joke, like, can a player get that's underrated be talked about being underrated so much that they become rated? So he might be in that category. And Rayshon Benny might be entering that category too. I mean, he was a 4-star recruit. He clearly is a factor on their defensive front as a pass rusher. You know, everyone talks about Chris Jenkins being able to stop the run. Kenneth Grant looks like he was created to stop the run, right? And Jim Harbaugh's basically said as much. And Mason Graham's and Chris Jenkins, they're both fairly well-rounded, but I think Rayshon Benny, when it's 3rd and 8, I think he's someone that they're going to be calling his name and saying, you know, get out there. I mean, just his ability just to get out of his position, that those first couple steps, I think his hand sounds, according to Mike Elson, it sounds like his hand usage has improved. And I don't think anyone's ever questioned, you know, his size, speed, ability. So, you know, he's someone that jumps out to me as someone that can be maybe play a bigger role than he's getting credit for right now. Zeke Berry, I will say I haven't heard a ton about him, but Steve, you've mentioned him a couple times now. I mean, is he number three in the safety room? Is he, I mean, I assume he could play nickel as well. What kind of role do you see for him this season as it stands right now? Obviously some of it's going to depend on how he looks in practices, how, you know, once they get the pads on and everything, but what kind of role do you see for a player like him this year, especially knowing that there's some turnover in that secondary from last season?
I mean, I think that's a good question. I feel like with him, I think his athletic ability is just too, and he's a very sound. I mean, he ended the cycle just outside of five-star status. And I know our West Coast guy, Brandon Huffman, absolutely loved him coming out of high school. I kind of feel like, and you could see it, he's another guy during the spring game. I don't know if you agree. I mean, he looked like he moves at a different speed than a lot of guys out there. And you're talking about a defense that should be one of the best in the country this year. I mean, he, again, just that pure athleticism, quickness, speed just flashed to me right away. I guess just A, knowing how high Michigan was on him, and B, just he is Swiss Army enough to me where I feel like they might be able to find a couple different roles for him in the defensive backfield. Maybe he could spell Mike Sainer still at the nickel spot. He could, I don't know if they'd throw him out at corner or not, but he might be sort of that, maybe call him like the sixth man, you know, of the secondary. I know he wouldn't literally be the sixth, but just that idea that he'll be the first guy off the bench and maybe a guy that they think is capable of spelling a few different players. I just think he has the potential. He has that ability and has the potential to do it this season. So to me, I'm going partially off of just the recruiting projection and just watching him in high school and then watching him again in the spring game. But just these are the kind of guys that Michigan has recruited that just they feel like they're too good to keep off the field for two full seasons, I guess. I just think that highly of him. I always have. So, you know, really, that's going to be another great question heading into fall camp or during fall camp is where are they utilizing him? Because, again, I think there's a few possibilities. You know, he's a guy, again, I don't think he would be, but he's another guy I had sort of in the back of my mind as a return guy. I don't know, maybe not the punt,
okay,
not the punt returner per se, but as one of the guys back there for kicks. Again, because I remember when Michigan was recruiting him, I mean, they really, I want to say they talked to him about, you know, a guy that they thought could play both ways eventually. And again, that a lot of times that doesn't come to fruition, but again, he has, you know, some of his offensive film was as impressive as his defensive film in high school. So, you know, again, just a guy that, you know, we know how much Michigan puts an emphasis on special teams. They like to put their best athletes back there. I can't fathom that he's not up there on the list, you know, and that's something we should be able to find out during fall camp, if not a little bit before.
I'm intrigued by him because I do think the snaps are there with RJ Moten gone, with Jamon Green gone, with DJ Turner gone. It's not all going to Barry, of course, but and obviously there's tons of other players who will be vying for that, those first or off the bench or key rotation roles, but you're right. He was someone Michigan was extremely excited about. Sometimes long list of guys who've been drafted by Michigan where it was, especially in the secondary, where it was year two where they made a difference. I think Will Johnson and Rod Moore are kind of spoiling fans where, oh, you know, all these true freshmen look great. It's often a redshirt freshman or sophomore type of year where they're able to really, where they've acclimated to the speed of the college game, to the frequency of passing, all the different nuances of going up against college wide receivers. So there's a little bit of a, historically speaking, there's a little bit of a learning curve there. All right. One quick question before we each pick our underrated. I did a story back in June and it was a very interesting way to look at summer workouts, because summer workouts, it's not about implementing plays. It's not about technique. You know, there's always a little bit of that stuff, never goes away, film review, technique, all that stuff. But it's a little bit more about, hey, add muscle, or hey, shed weight, or hey, get faster, or hey, get leaner, get stronger. You know, it's a little bit more of Ben Herbert's season. And he's done, to his credit, a really marvelous job, especially, I think, the last two years, obviously. But it does seem like since he arrived at Michigan, you know, there's a little bit of an adjustment period, but now he's really started to hit a groove in getting the most out of players in the summer. So I made a list of the players who had the most to gain in summer workouts, meaning, you know, some players are ready to go, right? They have proven established roles. Some players, for them to climb up the depth chart, it's probably going to happen in practice just by outplaying the other players at their position. But there are some players, whether they have muscle to build, speed to develop, whether they can get leaner, whether they can get stronger, maybe get more of a lower body base. You know, there's certain things that you can do in the summer that can make a difference. And suddenly you show up to fall camp and it's like, whoa, he definitely put in the work. I mean, on the basketball side of things, I mean, Kobe Bufkin added 20 pounds to his frame. He still looked really skinny, but that really did make a difference, especially in his ability to get to the rim. And in football, I mean, I could list countless examples, whether it's offensive linemen, whether it's, you know, guys in the trenches, players out wide. I think Aiden Hutchinson, even though he was a very good player as a sophomore, I think he really made that transformation. He would say a lot of it came in the summer. So, Steve, I made the list. My top three were Amarian Walker, which I think if you look at him, you can see that there's definitely strength and weight to be added there. Micah Pollard, who we just talked about, 208-pound linebacker, definitely muscle to be added there. I believe I had Kalel Mullings as number three, thinking if he can get a step or two faster and maybe get down from linebacker weight to running back weight, you know, what kind of running back can he be? I think Miles Hinton also jumped out to me. Who jumps out to you? And maybe there's some overlap there, but who jumps out to you as players who, obviously, you're curious about a bunch of different players once fall camp starts, but who, when you think about like the weigh-ins or how they look before the pads come on, who really jumps out to you as someone who can really change the trajectory of their 2023 season with a really effective summer strength and conditioning cycle?
So Micah Pollard is definitely the first one. And then I think the two that you highlighted, Micah Pollard and Morian Walker, I think are probably the two easiest ones. Real quick, though, an aside, is Kalel Mullings underrated now?
With the like, Benjamin Hall just in, type?
Just in general. Like, he played a huge role for them at the end of the season last year as a short yardage. We know how much Michigan loves to have a short yardage back. Now, granted, they were, I guess you could say, blessed with a guy who could be a short yardage guy and a bell cow with Hassan Haskins a couple years ago. But we know in short yardage, it's just, it's funny, his name comes up and it's like, he's a guy that played a pretty big role for them last season. You know, just kind of interesting to see.
I wonder if he's getting Metellus'd a little bit. I'm inventing that word. But sure. You know, Josh Metellus dropped that would-be pick six against Ohio State, and it kind of, in the fans' eyes, it kind of erased
all the good that,
all the good
done.
That he had been, sure. been showing. And, sure. and, you know, Mullings, I mean, that pass against Ohio State, he scored several touchdowns.
Yeah, right? No, he did,
and,
yeah.
And, but I do think the fumble against TCU on the goal line. And then also, I think it's a fair critique to say he was running a little high, right? He was
center
gravity. He definitely looked like someone who was asked to return to running back really for the first time during a season since high school, the week of the Ohio State game. So I do wonder if fans are kind of, because I kind of agree. You know, when people talk about the number three running back, I hear a lot about Benjamin Hall, a lot about CJ Stokes, and this is not to take away from them. You know, you hear Cole Cabana get mentioned there, but it could be Kalel Mullings. I mean, a whole offseason to kind of build on it. I would classify him as underrated.
Right? Just a little bit, or maybe not, classic slept on. Because maybe we'll see. I mean, because he could, he's in a weird position where he could get beaten out at both positions that he plays at, right? So it's like, I don't know. It's just he's one of the more interesting guys on the roster. But as far as the summer workouts, yeah, I think Amarian Walker, I think Micah Pollard, like you said. Also, I mean, I would throw in like a Jaden McBurrows as well as a guy who is now like totally 100%. It's a lot of times it's those guys. I think Tyler Morris, because I got to think he was either 100. He may have been healthy, but not at full capacity, let's say. You know, last year's summer workouts were probably his first real opportunity to kind of fully get back into playing shape. You know, so some of those guys who are coming off of injuries from even a year or maybe even 2 years ago. You know, I always talk about, like, you ever play fantasy baseball, you always, like, there's always that joke about, you know, every guy's in the best shape of his life when yes. you're looking at draft picks every, and stuff. You know,
every weight gain is added muscle. Every weight loss, they're just yes. leaner yes. and faster. There's literally no downside.
Yeah, baseball's the sport I always kind of think of that with when you hear about guys that are in the best shape of their career or whatever. But I think the situation, the guy like McBurrows or Morris, I think that actually may be the case, you know, where now they have a steady foundation to build off of, you know. So and you're talking with Morris and McBurrows, especially, you're talking about guys who we expect to see on the field, you know. So I think those are a couple other guys who, yeah, we've talked about a little bit already tonight, but, you know, guys I think that could really build off of, could use McBurrows didn't play a ton last year, but, like, could use some of a full season to, like I said, to really totally be 100% all the way around and use that to build off of in the weight room this summer.
Yeah, I think I did have a full list for those curious about more players, but in the interest of time, I might reshare that story just for the fans to kind of relook at it, because it was, I think it was right before they reported for summer workouts. But we got to get to our last question. Who are the most underrated players on offense and defense entering fall camp? We're still a couple weeks from fall camp for those listening to this at a later date. Fall camp has not started. But Steve, who are the most underrated players on offense and defense for you? I kind of tipped my hand on offense, and I said A.J. Barner. Who's your choice?
Honestly, with what we discuss, it's kind of hard not to agree, just because other guys that would maybe fit the bill are guys who have not really emerged or been on the field a lot. So it's hard to kind of call a player who hasn't, you know, like, it's hard to call, like, a Darius Clemens or a Matthew Hibner underrated, because they really haven't warranted being rated. So I think A.J. Barner is an excellent choice. And I would probably just have to agree with you.
I know, going off of the, when we voted our most important players and compared to the fan ballot, one player that you, whether you knew it or not, were higher on, or the fans were sleeping on more than you expected, was Trente Jones.
Jones is one, you know, again, a guy that got hurt, but was playing at a high level beforehand. And just, let's say, underrated as far as, like, a guy who actually is a legit contributor, is I still don't think Trevor Keegan really gets enough love for as good of football as he has played the last two seasons. I mean, do you remember how great he looked? Was it Penn State a couple of years ago?
In 2020? When
yeah, where he came in and just
starting the yeah. whole time.
Was it Filiaga was playing ahead of him, right? And we kind of were wondering, like, and he was struggling, which, to be fair, I think Chuck went to Minnesota and had a pretty good year for them last year. But Keegan came in right away. Yeah, I think we were in the press box, right? And were we? I don't know. Either way, I remember thinking, like, right away, like, yeah, I know, why is this guy? Why is this guy not playing?
Block. It was, like, perfect pad level, amazing power, and it led to, like, one of the bigger runs Michigan had. Granted, they didn't have a lot of great runs that season, but it was like, man, like, where's that guy been all year?
Yeah. So, you know, he's really kind of been a guy who's played at a pretty high level throughout. And again, I think he gets an adequate amount of, like, love and credit. And of course, the unit can claim the Joe Moore Award. But I don't feel like individually, I guess, I don't feel like he gets quite enough. So, again, not a guy, not underrated necessarily in the grand scheme of things. But I feel like he's a better ball player than what he maybe gets credit for.
Yeah, I think he's underrated in, like, the mock drafts and the preseason awards, because he was first team all Big Ten last year. But if you look at such and such website releases their preseason all Big Ten teams, and I think he is a little underrated there. But I know the fans love him because he's very vocal. He tells it like it is in press conferences, so the media likes that too. So keep it up, Trevor. But at the same time, I think he is someone who's value to Michigan might be a little underrated. I mean, I was a little surprised. I think he finished 14th or 15th in the most important players, and for a first team all Big Ten third year starter, you know, I think that that feels a little low. So I think, you know, that's a good choice as well. All right. On defense, for me, I talked about him a lot, so I'll try to be quick this time. But Makari Page, he's my choice. I mean, I had him 11th in the most important player series, and fans had him 24th. And I think he's someone, part of it's his demeanor. He's a little bit quieter of a guy. Part of it's the safety position. I feel like every other year I'm picking one of these safeties as a player who does not get enough credit, not get enough love. I know Brad Hawkins was my choice for most underrated player a couple years ago. And I just want to read this coverage stat. So last year he played 296 coverage snaps. He was only targeted in coverage 11 times. So teams were just straight up not throwing to him. I mean, that's what, one in every 30 snaps he was targeted. He only allowed 6 receptions and 54 yards all season. He had 3 pass breakups and an interception. So he almost had a hand on the ball more than the receivers that he was covering. Out of 340 safeties in college football last year to play at least 200 snaps, according to Pro Football Focus, he was 6th in passing yards allowed, 5th in passer rating allowed, 9th in snaps per target, and 7th in snaps per reception. And that was one reception every 47 coverage snaps that he played. So, I mean, you're talking about a top 10 coverage safety, and you're talking about someone who's 6'4", moves extremely well, and kind of took over a starting safety job when I don't think this time a year ago we were saying that there was one available. So, yeah, he's definitely my underrated. I do want to see, you know, how he looks as a tackler in the run game. I think that's something he wasn't asked to do that a ton last season. So I do think that there's still areas that he can grow, but I see a lot more NFL potential in him than I think gets talked about. And I see a lot more big play, big game potential. You know, thinking about Michigan playing against other top 10 teams, I feel like he can make a big difference in that game. Well, that game, but also the other games. I think he can make play a bigger role in those kind of games than what gets talked about right now. Steve, who jumps out to you? I mean, there's a whole bunch of candidates, but who jumps out to you as Mr. Underrated on Michigan's defense heading into fall camp?
I mean, I'm not sure. Again, with the underrated, I don't like underrated to me and underrated in general. I don't know, two different things. Where did we have Derek Moore on the top 25? Was he on there?
Yeah, he was 18th. Had him 12th, so that is one player.
Okay. It's a big roster, but like, he's the guy I always think of when we talk about a guy who is maybe, yeah, outside of that top 10, let's say, of the important players or whatever. Or just to say best players on the roster. To me, he's always the first guy I think of when you talk about a guy who could end up well within the top 10 by the end of the season. He has all the tools to become a dominant pass rusher at the college level. You know, and really, again, a guy that played a ton last year. So he's not somebody I would really pick as a breakout, sort of like not quite to the level of Mason Graham, because Graham played a lot, but similar in that I just think he's a guy that could really take a huge step this season. So he's, I mean, 18th out of the 25 is actually pretty solid, I think, for a second year guy who maybe didn't play a ton last year.
Fans a lot of credit because he didn't have he didn't have crazy box score stats last year.
Right.
Although the 2 sacks, that is a lot more than most true freshmen who come through. That's more than Rashawn Gary had. That's more than Aiden Hutchinson had. You know, you can kind of run through the list. Kwity Paye, David Ajabo. I mean, to be ready to make that kind of impact, and I know he's a little bit older. I think he's already 20. But to make that kind of impact as a true freshman, I wouldn't discount that as nothing. I mean, he came in more college ready than a lot of edge defenders do for Michigan.
I know when Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma, I mean, Michigan was on that one. Like, that was immediate. So, I mean, they went after him like crazy. People remember he was committed to Oklahoma for quite a while and left after Lincoln Riley went to USC. But either way, I mean, yeah, I think, yeah, he's a guy. And I also am somebody who's high on Braden McGregor. Like, I think Braden McGregor's going to have a good year this year too. I just think Moore has a higher ceiling, which again doesn't mean that McGregor isn't going to be really. I think Derek Moore is a guy like another potential first round type pick for Michigan at the edge defensive end type spot. So he would be mine just because, like I said, I think he could end the year somewhere in the top seven, let's say, or eight of best players on the roster.
Yeah, let me read this quote from defensive coordinator Jesse Minter. The best part about Derek is he has the mindset to be a really, really high-end dominant player. He has a chance to be, and he said all of these, high-end draft choice one day. High-end player, productive. He's just got to stay in the process, stay on the progress that he's on. Coach Herb has done a great job with him. I mean, so basically, Minter's saying without formally saying, this is a guy who could be a top 10 NFL draft pick. Isn't there yet. I'm not saying, and I'm not guaranteeing or setting that expectation yet, but I think year two is step two of that process, and I think year three is when he could be as good as anyone Michigan produces at that position, and they produce a lot. I'm not, you know, he'll have to make that jump from where he is now to where he can be, but he does have that kind of ceiling. I see a lot of Rashawn Gary in his game in terms of, you know, his size, his speed, just the way he can dominate offensive tackles. He's pretty impressive for only entering his sophomore season. All right, that's going to do it. We talked about a bunch of different names. If you want to read more about any of those players, tons of stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Be sure to check it all out. Next week, the journey begins, I guess, for Michigan, because Big Ten Media Days will take place in Indianapolis. Myself, Sam Webb, and Alejandro Zuniga will all be down there providing coverage from Jim Harbaugh, Blake Corum, Chris Jenkins, and Mike Sainristil still. That's always kind of the unofficial kickoff of football, quote-unquote, season, even though the actual season does start until September. There will be tons of build-up for Michigan football, so don't miss out. Check out all of our podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Wherever you heard this one, you can probably find more. And then over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com, got tons of stories. Starting to get into more of the preview content for those who are clamoring for it. It's about that time. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.